actually we get a good change of the seasons here. It's not like what most people picture of Florida. We have the fall, the leaves actually fall, and the trees are bare right now. So winter has arrived. Today I'm going to do more of a current affairs than a real normal sermon today. So if you would, turn to Joshua chapter 1. Joshua chapter 1. We'll begin. After the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Lord spoke to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' assistant, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore arise, go over this Jordan, you and all this people, to the land which I am giving to them, the children of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon, I have given you, as I said to Moses. Verse 4, from the wilderness and this Lebanon, as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites into your territory. No man shall be able to stand before you all the days of your life, as I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will not leave you nor forsake you. Be strong and of good courage, for this people you shall divide as an inheritance the land which I swore to their fathers to give them. So here we have God spoke to Joshua. I mean, this is not through someone else. It says God spoke to Joshua, and God gave the 12 tribes of Israel the land from the Mediterranean Sea to the Euphrates River. And God gave them the key to happiness. If we read on in the next few verses, let's continue in verse 7. Only be strong and very courageous that you may observe to do according to all the law which Moses my servant commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right hand or the left hand that you may prosper wherever you go. This book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate in it day and night, that you may observe to do according to all that is written in it. For then you will make your way prosperous, and then you will have good success. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and of good courage. Do not be afraid, nor be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. Notice, God said this. He said to meditate and do what is written in this book of the law, and you will be prosperous and successful. That is the key to happiness, to be prosperous and successful, and to be content with what you have that God has given you. So this is called the promised land that he was leading them over Jordan into. Here Joshua is going to be the head. It's also called the Holy Land or Canaan, Palestine, etc. It's according to who is describing it. But today I hope to bring out what was near and dear to Wayne Bedwell, the current affairs of the state of Judah, what we call Israel today. It should be called the state of Judah. December 23rd, 2016, UN Resolution 2334, the Security Council voted 14-0 with the United States abstaining. The U.S. could have vetoed this entire resolution as the Obama administration did in February of 2011. It's almost the exact same resolution that they had vetoed a few years ago. So why abstain now? Well, two reasons. Number one, President Obama is being vindictive and revengeful in his final months in office to several people, Netanyahu and to the president-to-be. The second reason is that Israelis have added over 100,000 settlers in Obama's 8 years in office. Some 570,000 Israelis live in these settlements now. These are in the areas the Jews call disputed territories, but the United Nations and most of the world calls them occupied territories. occupied by Israel since 1967. Israel argues that there were no sovereigns over the West Bank and Gaza prior to 1967. Actually, Jordan had occupied the West Bank before this. The resolutions condemned acts of violence to civilians, and this covers both sides, but mainly the Palestinians are the one who are inciting violence to civilians. This resolution has provisions that could cause a major war involving Israel because it will not recognize any changes to June 4th, 1967 boundaries. And this is one day before what was called the Six Days War. And these boundaries include Jerusalem. This means Jews will not have access to what they call the Western Wall, where they offer prayers, nor to East Jerusalem settlements. And one of the things that sparked this was was fixing to vote, the city of Jerusalem was, the city council of Jerusalem, the Jewish part, was fixing to vote to build more settlements and had plans to do so. And they've been put on hold right now for the present time. Now, the political maneuvering to pass this is astonishing, this UN Resolution 2334. The official line is that the British and Palestinians prepared this document, and Egypt was to propose it to the UN. Israel claims that the United States administration drafted it in secret and let others claim it, that they drafted it and gave it to Israel. However, soon-to-be President Trump called President El-Sisi of Egypt and asked to withdraw it before the vote, and Egypt withdrew it under probably pressure of not getting all the money that we give to Egypt every year. Then Malaysia, Senegal, Venezuela, and New Zealand took up the draft and proposed it to the UN, Britain putting pressure on New Zealand. So we see the Israelitish nations of Britain, New Zealand, and the United States working against the Jews of Israel. Those who believe in America and Britain Israelism could say Ephraim and Manasseh working against Judah. So it seems that some things never change, huh? But this resolution, though it cannot be strictly enforced by the UN, has tremendous effects. Sanctions against Israel and the fact that incoming President Trump may cut the UN budget by 1/4 to 1/3. That's the realistic amount he could cut it. He could actually cut it more, but not realistic. This may be the impetus to move the UN headquarters to Brussels, Belgium, or elsewhere, but it's been talked about Brussels, Belgium for several decades now. So what seemed like a petty move by this administration adds fuel to the Middle East fire. Ironically, it was UN Resolution 181, back written in 1947, that formally allowed the formation of a Jewish state. Arab leaders could have done the same but refused. That UN Resolution 181 was for both sides, and at the same time, the Palestinians could have had a two-state rule from the very beginning. They have refused the two-state solution ever since, contrary to what most people think. Arafat refused it during the Clinton presidency. They only want the complete annihilation of the Jews. So Wayne Bedwell, the late Wayne Bedwell, in several sermons touched on this, especially the Jews' belief in trading land for peace. And that's what this document will basically do away with, is their ability to trade land for peace. Because according to this UN resolution, they don't own any of the land that they would be trading for peace. They've already given up the Gaza Strip, and you see how well that turned out. They have rockets flown over at them quite regularly. This is land gained control over in the 67 war and 73. This was a war disputed about who actually started it. Israel definitely fired the first shots. The West Bank in dispute was occupied by Jordan, but that has never been part of Jordan. But if you look at Joshua chapter 1 that we just read, we see that Jordan was given to the ancient Israelites, and because of the boundaries that God set. But even though it still says that once you cross over to Jordan, they would get all of the land inside what was Canaan, where all these pagan tribes lived, but they had to fight these people and do away with it. But remember, 2.5 tribes even had their inheritance in Jordan. Let's turn there and read that. Numbers 32. Numbers chapter 32. And we'll read the first 4 verses of Numbers 32. Now the children of Reuben and the children of Gad, a very great multitude of livestock, when they saw the land of Jazer and the land of Gilead, that indeed the region was a place for livestock, the children of Gad and the children of Reuben came and spoke to Moses, to Eleazar the priest, and to the leaders of the congregation, saying, Ataroth, Dibon, Jazer, Nimrah, Heshbon, Eleazle, Shebam, Nebo, and beyond, the country which the Lord defeated before the congregation of Israel, is a land for livestock, and your servants have livestock. Verse 5, therefore, they said, if we have favor in your sight, let this land be given to your servants as a possession. Do not take us over the Jordan. So this was east of the Jordan River. And if you remember, at first, it seems that Moses wasn't for that at all. He told them they should have to go in and fight, and they agreed to do that. And this was all east of the Jordan River, and it's a huge chunk of land if you look at the map. It's a sizable amount of land. Manasseh had more land than any other tribe, and it was about equal amounts on the east or on the west side of the Jordan River, and they joined. The Jordan River was in the middle of almost middle ways of the land of Manasseh. Gad and Reuben stretched almost to the Sea of Galilee on the north, down to the middle of the Dead Sea on the south. Let's go to Deuteronomy 11, while we're close here. We're talking about a tremendous amount of land. Deuteronomy 11, this is what they said. It says, every place on which the sole of your foot treads shall be yours, from the wilderness and Lebanon, from the river Euphrates, even to the western sea, shall be your territory. Well, their foot treaded across a lot of land that was never considered to be the Holy Land there, but they could have had it, and they did obtain this on the east side of Jordan. So when they're talking about the West Bank, they're talking about land on the western side of the Jordan River in what is considered Israel. So the land God allowed occupied was even more than what is considered Canaan west of Jordan River. But none of this ancient history gives the Jews license to occupy the land that will occur when God returns Judah and Israel to the land. I'll try to touch on this at the very end of this sermon, when that's when they'll really return. The late Ted Phillips of Talent Ministry gave a terrific sermon on the Palestinians and explained what the consequences of the Israelites making deals with these people when they came into the land instead of doing what God told them to do and taking the land from these people. Ted Phillips gave an interesting sermon on that. Canaanites' failure to kill all the pagan Canaanites, as God had commanded, and not to make treaties, intermarry, or be led astray by these people spiritually. And he talked about how they are to be a thorn in the side of Israel to this day. And that is certainly true. It still continues on, not to this day, but daily. So we have what Israel calls disputed territories, and the Palestinians call occupied territories. Up until World War I, about 1917, the Ottoman Empire had control of all of the Canaan, or Palestine as we call it. There was around the world what was considered to be a Jewish problem, and as you know, it went through two world wars, but this was earlier, this was the First World War. The Jewish problem, having a homeland, was being worked on in the 1890s, and Lord Balfour and others finally, during World War I, promoted it, and it came to be in 1949. Notice I just said the Muslims controlled Palestine until 1917. What many of us, including myself, have a problem comprehending is that the Jews have always fared better under the Muslims than under the Christians. We here in America have got our Judeo-Christian roots. You hear this on the news, you hear it in the churches, you hear it everywhere about our Judeo-Christian roots. But I want you to remember the statement I just made, that most of us don't understand as Americans that the Jews have always fared better under the Muslims than under the Christians. I'm going to read from a book. It's Paul Johnson's, and it's entitled A History of the Jews. And this is on page 167 and over on to part of page 166 and 167, The History of the Jews by Paul Johnson. The Byzantine Empire, this was the so-called Christians, I'm quoting now, the Byzantine Empire, enfeebled by its multitudinous religious disputes, invited invasion. It came first in 611 when the Persians broke into Palestine, taking Jerusalem 3 years later after a 20-day siege. The Jews were accused of assisting them, but if, as the Christians allege, the Persians had given in return a promise to restore the city to the Jews, they certainly did not keep their word. In any case, Heraclius retook the city in 629, and a massacre of Jews followed. But this was the last act of Greek power in Palestine. The same year, Muhammad completed the conquest of Mecca. The Byzantines were decisively defeated at the Battle of Yarmouk in 636, and within 4 years, the Muslims occupied all Palestine and most of Syria too. Chalcedonians, Monophysites, Nestorians, Copts, Seleucians, and Armenians, Latins and Greeks, Samaritans and Jews were all collectively submerged beneath the flood of Islam. That's what ISIS's intent is today, by the way. Continuing on. Like Christianity, Islam was originally a heterodox movement within Judaism, which diverged to the point where it became a separate religion, then rapidly developed its own dynamic and characteristics. The Jewish presence in Arabia is very ancient. In the south, in what is now Yemen, Jewish trading interests date back to the 1st century B.C., but in the north, or Hejaz, it goes back very much further. One Arab historical legend says that the Jewish settlement in Medina occurred under King David, and another puts it back to Moses. Babylonian inscriptions discovered in 1956 suggest that Jewish religious communities were introduced into the Hejaz in the 6th century B.C. and may have been there even before. But the first definite confirmation in the form of Jewish names in tomb inscriptions and graffiti does not go back further than the 1st century B.C. At all events during the early Christian era, Judaism spread on North Arabia and some tribes became wholly Jewish. There is no evidence that Jewish poets flourished in the region of Medina. It says there is evidence that Jewish poets flourished in the region of Medina in the 4th century A.D. And it is even possible that a Jewish ruled state existed there at the time. According to Arab sources, about 20 tribes in and around Medina were Jewish. These settled oasis tribes were traders as much as pastoralists, and Islam was from the start a semi-urban trader's religion rather than a desert one. But the desert was important because Jews living on its fringes or moving to it to escape the corruptions of city life, such as the Nazarites, had always practiced a more rigorous form of Judaism, and in particular had been uncompromising in their monotheism. That was what attracted Muhammad. The influence of Christianity, which would not have been strictly monotheistic in his eyes, was a very slight, at any rate, at this early stage. What he seems to have wished to do was to destroy the polytheistic paganism of the Oasis culture by giving the Arab Jewish ethical monotheism in a language they could understand and in terms adapted to their ways. He accepted the Jewish God and their prophets, the idea of fixed law embodied in scriptures, the Quran being an Arabic substitute for the Bible, and the addition of an oral law applied in religious courts. End quote. So, here we have that the Muslim religion came out of Judaism. But we must remember Judaism was not the religion given to ancient Israel. Judaism was what Christ railed against. But Muhammad chose Judaism because it was monotheistic. He believed in one God. Muhammad could not bring himself to worship the Christian God, the God of the Catholic Church, in other words. Remember, this is 600 AD we're talking about. He didn't believe in a Trinity. Muhammad believed all that the Jews believed. Now think about that. He believed all that Jews believed. In fact, Arabia was mostly Jewish for hundreds of years. The Jews thrived in Arabia just as they did in Babylon. And remember, out of about 1 million Jews that was in Babylon, only 42,000 returned when given the opportunity. They had basically established their own government and religion within Babylon. Now, you have to think about this. We probably don't ever look at Islam from this viewpoint that I'm talking about here, that it strictly came out of Judaism. It was a, in fact, Muhammad believed it. It said he believed all of what the Jews believed. The trouble is the Jews just didn't accept him as one of their own, and that's where things got changed. In fact, because they wouldn't consider him the last prophet is why he rewrote some things and changed from having a Saturday Sabbath to a Friday. So you see, it's not much difference in squabbling within the church groups here in America today. In Arabia, in the 5th and 6th centuries, the Jews dominated the religions and founded the city of Yathrib in Arabia. Now, there's one author that wrote about this, and he said that Arabia, the way he put it, was within a hair's breadth of becoming completely Jewish at this time when they established the city of Yathrib. Y-I-T-H-R-A-B. Remember that. In 610, Muhammad was 40 years old. He went to a desert cave, and Muslim traditions say he received visions from the angel Gabriel. These were mystical visions. He returned with a mission to bring the corrupt society of Arabia at that time. It was very corrupt. You know, it was about like any American city is today. Same things going on. And he wanted to change it. So he preached an end to this sinning and preached peace and justice. He advocated for the poor, the orphans, slaves, and women. So think about that. It does not sound like Arabia today at all, the way they treat women. He created a fellowship of a new monotheistic faith he called Islam, meaning surrender to God. And one who surrenders is a Muslim. Why not just preach the religion of Judaism? Well, because the Jews would not agree to call him that last prophet. He even believed that Jesus Christ was a prophet. The Jews would not accept his Arab version of Judaism. Probably one of these guys, you know, if you read all these different books written about it, if he'd went about it in a different way, he would have probably had become part of Judaism. But he was in a hurry to get what he wanted to get done. But he said the Jews would not accept his Arab version of Judaism, but they rejected the Christian version also. Remember, they killed Christ. That's one of the things he said, at least they didn't kill him. But about these mystical visions that he had, let's turn to Deuteronomy chapter 13. We'll begin in verse 1. This reminds me of Muhammad here. If there arises among you a prophet or a dreamer of dreams, and he gives you a sign or a wonder, and the sign or the wonder comes to pass, of which he spoke to you, saying, let us go after other gods which you have not known, and let us serve them, you shall not listen to the words of that prophet or that dreamer of dreams, for the Lord your God is testing you to know whether you love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul. You shall walk after the Lord your God and fear him and keep his commandments and obey his voice. You shall serve him and hold fast to him. But that prophet or dreamer of dreams shall be put to death, because he has spoken in order to turn you away from the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt and redeemed you from the house of bondage, to entice you away from the way in which the Lord your God commanded you to walk. So you shall put away the evil from your midst. If your brother, the son of your mother, the son of your son or your daughter, the wife of your bosom, or your friend who is in your own soul, secretly entices you, saying, let us go and serve other gods which you have not known, neither you nor your fathers, of all the gods of the people which are all around you, near to you, or far off from you, from one end of the earth to the other end of the earth, you shall not consent to him or listen to him, nor shall your eye pity him, nor shall you spare him or conceal him. But you shall surely kill him. Your hand shall be the first against him to put him to death, and afterward the hand of all the people. In other words, you're to pick up the first stone. And you shall stone him with the stones until he dies, because he sought to entice you away from the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage. So all Israel shall hear and fear, and not again do such wickedness as this among you. If you hear someone in one of your cities in which the Lord your God gives you to dwell in, saying, corrupt men have gone out from among you and enticed the inhabitants of their city, saying, let us go and serve other gods which you have not known, Then you shall inquire, search out, and ask diligently. And if it is indeed true and certain that such an abomination was committed among you, you shall surely strike the inhabitants of the city with the edge of the sword, utterly destroying it, all that is in it and its livestock with the edge of the sword. And you shall gather all of its plunder into the middle of the street and completely burn with fire the city and all its plunder for the Lord your God. It shall be a heap forever and shall not be built upon. So none of the accursed things shall remain in your hand, that the Lord may turn from his fierceness of his anger and show you mercy, have compassion on you and multiply you, just as he has swore to your fathers. Because you have listened to the voice of the Lord your God to keep all his commandments which I command you today, to do what is right in the eyes of the Lord your God. No chapter break here. Continues right on. It says, you are the children of the Lord your God. You shall not cut yourself nor shave the front of your head for the dead. For you are a holy people to the Lord your God, and the Lord had chosen you to be a people for himself, a special treasure above all the peoples who are on the face of the earth. Now, our forefathers in this country, the United States, believed in providence, that we were an exceptional people. And God told these people here that they were a special treasure. They were chosen above all the people on the earth. That God had, you know, our forefathers believed we were an exceptional people. And that's being argued with today in the press and amongst the candidates running for president this last time. That God had a purpose for us. The Jews have always believed that they were a special people and that they had a hedge against any other religion. And it has. That they've survived without being incorporated into these other religions, even though they were being oppressed and ruled over by all these religions. But God does test everyone. Here we have warnings against dreamers of dreams, and that is what Muhammad was. And these dreams or visions is the only connection of the Muslim to Jerusalem. Muhammad's vision that he ascended to heaven on a winged horse, and that winged horse had like the body of a woman and the tail of a peacock, but anyway, he ascended to heaven on a winged horse from a far place, it says, and saw the prophets and Moses and Jesus. Now, this was a vision. We know that Scripture says that only Jesus has ascended into heaven. But the far place, or the Father's place, in Islam is El Aqsa. In Arabic. And the Ottoman leadership later decided that the Father's place that he had in this vision is the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. Now, Muhammad didn't dream that in his vision. He didn't see that that's where that was. It was just described as the Father's place. Later, it was described that way by the Ottoman rulers. The huge rock where Muhammad must have ascended to heaven in his vision, they say. Muhammad died in 632, and the Dome of the Rock was built in 691, nearly 69 years after Muhammad died. And 50 years after Israel is conquered by Omar. Quran does not mention Jerusalem, though it is considered the third or fourth holiest place in Islam. Mecca is number one. Medina is number two. Well, what's Medina? You remember when we talked about the city founded by the Jews, Yathrib? That is the modern Medina. It was actually founded by Jews. It was actually a Jewish city. In Arabia. The Dome of the Rock is not a mosque. It is a shrine. built to show superiority of Islam over Christianity and Judaism. It's got a few writings in there. I've been there. I guess many of you have probably been there. You go inside this building, and it's got this huge rock roped off that's in the middle of the thing there. You can walk around it, and you can see this huge rock. And this is where they claim that Muhammad ascended into heaven on his winged horse. Most photographs of Jerusalem or paintings is dominated by this shrine, now with its gold-plated dome. Do you notice anytime you see Jerusalem, or you see any of these reporters reporting from Jerusalem, they're standing where they can have this gold-covered dome in the background. That's the Dome of the Rock. This is this shrine, this Muslim shrine. In 1956, it was plated with anodized aluminum. Now, anodized aluminum has a gold color to it. If you see these boats with tops on them, they look like they have a gold frame to it. That's anodized aluminum. And later, King Hussein of Jordan sold one of his houses in London and gold-plated the dome. I think it took about 80 kilos of gold to do this, that gold leaf they put over it. The El Aqsa Mosque stands next to it on the Temple Mount. There is a mosque there, a Muslim mosque, right there beside it, but not what is really prominent or dominates any of these pictures. And ironically, these Muslim shrines and mosques were built before the Great Mosque in Mecca. Mecca is the capital of Islam and the place that they face when they do their prayers. This site in Jerusalem is the third holiest to Sunni Muslims and the fourth to the Shiites. The Sunnis and Shiites are a division in Islam after Muhammad's death. Now, when Muhammad died, there was an argument whether it was his cousin or his uncle, I forget. They f***ed it up anyways, part followed one and part followed the other, but most Muslims in the world are Sunnis. Now, another thing we have in the world today is a common thing that we see is this jihad. After Muhammad's death, the Muslims were ready for jihad. Now, completely different meaning almost than what we have today. Now it actually means struggle or holy struggle. Now they call it holy war. This holy struggle is to bring the world to Allah. That's what it was all about, to bring the world to Allah. The ultimate goal, to bring all the world to Allah. They waged jihad against the Byzantine and Persian empires and saved the Jews from being wiped out by who? The Christians. The Christians may have wiped the Jews off the face of the earth, except of course, we know for divine intervention that would not happen, and this may have been divine intervention that allowed the Muslims to defeat the Byzantines. The Jews, even though Muhammad slaughtered them in Arabia around Mecca, and that was just in the last years of his life when he did this, most of the time the Jews were protected because they were a necessity to all these different peoples and religions, countries, as is today, as it was in Nazi Germany, the Jews were businessmen, bankers, and diamond traders, wealthier people have always been. But even though Muhammad slaughtered them in several cities there, in around Mecca, they fared much better under the Muslims than the Christians. And it's not our normal American way of thinking. But the Jews know their own history, and they know that sometimes they make decisions that don't seem to be right to us here in America. So back to UN Resolution 2334. Even the UN ambassador from the United States, who is a woman, and I'm sorry, but I did not learn her name, admitted that there are more resolutions against Israel than the Sudan, Syria, Iran, all these Middle Eastern countries who are causing death of people unnecessarily. There are more resolutions against Israel than all these combined. And the U.S. did not veto this resolution. This resolution may be a pivotal in the future of Jews in Israel, but in no way will it lead to peace. Let's turn to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. Beginning verse 1. But concerning the times and the seasons, brethren, you have no need that I should write to you. For you yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so comes as a thief in the night. For when they say peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes upon them, as labor pains upon a pregnant woman, and they shall not escape. You know, when man thinks peace, that's when we're going to have the beginning of the millennium. When man thinks he's worked out all the problems here, that's when God's going to show his wrath. Jeremiah 30. Jeremiah 30. Let's read the first three verses. The word of the Lord came to Jeremiah from the Lord, saying, thus speaks the Lord God of Israel, saying, write in a book for yourself all the words that I have spoken to you. For behold, the days are coming, says the Lord, that I will bring back from captivity my people Israel and Judah, says the Lord, and I will cause them to return to the land that I gave to their fathers, and they shall possess it. Now, these words here that I just read, this was over 100 years after the split between Judah and Israel. So this has to be a future thing that's going to happen. This is not something that was prophesied and they were brought back into the land. This is a future event that will happen. Turn over to chapter 33 of Jeremiah. Jeremiah 33. We'll read verses 7 through 9. And I will cause the captives of Judah and the captives of Israel to return and will rebuild those places as at the first. I will cleanse them from all their iniquities which they have sinned against me, and I will pardon all their iniquities by which they have sinned and by which they have transgressed against me. Then it shall be to me a name of joy, a praise, and an honor before all nations of earth, who shall hear all the good that I do to them. They shall fear and tremble for all the goodness and all the prosperity that I provide for them. So God promised them this holy land and told them what it would take to be prosperous and all. But then here in Jeremiah we learned that none of that happened. They were split up, they were taken captive and all that. And after this we read that God's going to make them return to that land. And they shall fear and tremble for the goodness and all the prosperity that I provided for. So he's going to make it happen in spite of people, in spite of us failing the test. You know, it appears that there will not be peace in Israel at all. Israel will be rubble until the Lord